These materials are energetic. They're being built in precision geometry. They're being aligned to the solstice and the equinox. They're being constructed on energetic lines on the planet that are focused areas of electromagnetic force. All of this screams to me that they were using it energetically. What for? That's the real question.
What about the idea of extraterrestrial involvement?
Now we're getting in there. This is another thing with the Western academia and like Western historians and mainstream archaeology. So in Peru, you have this incredible site called Sacsayhuaman. And it is this multi-ton stone building project where you have these huge stones fitted together like jigsaw puzzle pieces. No mortar, no binding agent, just they fit together. You can't put a razor blade between them. It's one of the most incredible prehistoric sites in the world. Well, I say it's prehistoric, but the Western cultures, the Western historians will attribute this to the Incas, right? To the civilization of the Incas. But the indigenous stories that come from this area, from the very people that we attribute it to, attribute it to another race, attribute it to a lost civilization. They say that it was far older than their Inca civilization and that they found it and they built around it. And there's evidence that they did build around it and added some less advanced structural integrity to it. But again, it just speaks to the fact that essentially what happened here is Western historians went somewhere, said it was the Incas. The people who are now the ancestors of the Incas said it's not the Incas. And we teach our children it's the Incas. Tell me why that's logical. Why? What evidence do they have for this? So that's why we have serious problems with mainstream history, because we have assumptions that it's so methodically thought out. They've really done the work. But in all honesty, with these things that contradict the model, that's what's important. When it's something that's a thorn in the side, it doesn't matter if it's explainable. They'll do all the really good work. They'll do all the really good analysis. But when it's not explainable, they just go, oh, it must have been the Incas. Oh, it must have been the Egyptians. Oh, it must have been the ancient Greek. But they don't actually examine the evidence that contradicts that.
Yeah. So they're not willing to say, oh, it actually turns out that the Earth revolves around the sun and not the other way around. Like, they're not willing to actually have that moment of maybe we're just wrong. Maybe our whole fundamental thesis is completely wrong.
It's repeated through history. All of history, we've done the same thing, the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so tell us, what do you think? Who do you think built the pyramids?
Honestly, it's the same answer as like who built Stonehenge and who built these other areas around the world that I'm fascinated by, Göbekli Tepe in Turkey. You know, we don't know, but it's not the Egyptians that we have been attributing it to, I don't think, in my opinion and the opinion of many others as well. It's a potentially antediluvian pre-flood, before global cataclysm era construct. And the thing is, the advancement that you see in the pyramids, it's almost like it's a time capsule of knowledge. I mean, people speak about, you know, the hidden records of the pre-flood eras, these lost civilizations, you know, hear about Atlantis and things like this. But when you actually look at what the pyramids represent, I mean, there is incredibly advanced knowledge encoded into the actual architecture itself. And a lot of people would argue that this is actually some form of knowledge time capsule. And when you examine the global myth of a flood, and then you realize that there's actually global mythologies of cycles of destruction, cycles of rebirth on this planet. There's been many rises and falls of civilization according to a lot of ancient texts and ancient scripts from India to Egypt. It doesn't matter. There's always stories about rises and falls of previous civilizations. And so there is an idea that these pyramids are in essence guide stones for humanity. When these cataclysms take place, these pyramids will survive. They will withstand the seismic vibration. They will withstand the floods. They're powerful enough to do so. And what's left is the knowledge encased in the actual stonework itself as something to be decoded and kind of reverse engineered. And when we do that, we find incredible science that should not be present and was not present in dynastic Egypt. So I would say that it is evidence of a lost civilization. And the last thing I'll finish up on with this is the story of Atlantis. You know, a lot of people laugh that off. But if you know where we get the story of Atlantis, it's quite interesting. It comes from Plato, the great Greek philosopher, but it doesn't just come from Plato. It actually comes from his great ancestor, oh my gosh, I always know his name and I've completely forgotten it, but his great-great-grandfather, Solon, he was a sacred sage of ancient Greece, and he was a lawmaker. He was a very well-respected individual in ancient Greece. He traveled to Egypt. He traveled to the ancient city of Sais, and it was there that he spoke with the priests of antiquity, he spoke with these priests of these temples, and in his books he recorded these conversations, and he wanted to talk about history, and essentially they laughed at him and said, oh, Solon, you Greek know nothing of history. There have been many rises and falls way before your time. They didn't say way before. I'm using my own modern vernacular here. It wasn't like, dude, like, trust me, Solon, it was way before your time. But seriously, they were saying, you know, you don't know nothing. You're basically children. You have no idea. And this is where they gave him the story of Atlantis. He takes that back to Greece. That gets given down to Plato. Plato gives it to the world. And we ignore Plato and say it's just a metaphor. It's just an allegory. It's just a story. Even though he gave the dimensions in stadia, which is the measurement they used in ancient Greece, gave the dimensions in stadia. He gave the geographical location. He described it. He talked about what they represented. And so I think that there is some truth to it. There was a lost time, a lost chapter, a lost story. And I think that we're almost like the traumatized offspring of that time period. We're so the opposite of whatever was going on this planet before this happened. It's like that cataclysm sent us down a radically different path. It's so different that when we see all this amazing evidence from the past, we can't even recognize it for what it is. We can't recognize it as some form of technology or some sort of functional system. We just see it as a tourist attraction, and it speaks so much to our level of consciousness.
So that theory would be that there was some sort of an ancient civilization that was highly technologically advanced that somehow got wiped out.
Yeah, technologically advanced, but in a different medium, through a different type of avenue to us. It wasn't wires and cables and batteries and microchips and superconductors. It was using the planet as a technology. That's my opinion. And that might sound really strange until you dissect what the planet's made out of and realize that the materials that comprise our planet are energetic. Many of them have incredible properties, like they can produce electricity under stress through vibration, through acoustic vibration. They can repel or attract magnetic fields. So what's very interesting is so many of these highly advanced prehistoric sites are actually made out of these very geoenergetic materials. So rose quartz granite, that's a part of the Great Pyramids of Giza, limestone, a fantastic amplifier of acoustic resonance, and then they are built on focal points on the earth. So again, the pyramid sits on true north, you know, and if you don't understand that the planet has all of these energetic fields, this isn't like spiritual woo-woo. We know this. We know that the planet produces electromagnetic energy. There is a toroidal energetic field that's constantly flowing around our planet. And so there are focal points where electromagnetic energy will be concentrated. And so what if they were harnessing this? This is basically, in my opinion, like ancient Nikola Tesla technology. Nikola Tesla, the amazing, basically the inventor of the 21st century, who died penniless and destitute because he was too controversial and too incredible to be given his time in the light, but is now venerated as a genius of electrical physics. He was using the same ideas, and he was fascinated by the pyramids. He was convinced the pyramids represented what he was trying to do, tapping into the larger energetic fields that surround our planet and using that energy somehow, for some reason. He wanted to use it to create the world we live in today. And perhaps these people were using it for a similar function, but it's true that we don't find technology in the same sense that we see technology. But that's what I mean by saying we've gone so far away from whatever we were that we can't recognize that these materials are energetic. They're being built in precision geometry. They're being aligned to the solstice and the equinox. They're being constructed on energetic lines on the planet that are focused areas of electromagnetic force. All of this screams to me that they were using it energetically. What for? That's the real question. That's what really gets me going. What were they actually using it for?
What about the idea of extraterrestrial involvement?
Now we're getting in there.
Why else would the pyramids be sitting, like you said, you know, you'd have to have a satellite to place them in certain spots exactly. I mean, that points towards the sky, right? And needing to be able to look down. I mean, that seems to point to extraterrestrial involvement in some way.
and they're aligned to the Orion Star Belt. That's another important point to understand. The alignment with the Orion Star Belt is something that happens again around the world, which is quite interesting. Orion pops up quite a lot. And if you look at the most ancient myths we have that come from places like Sumeria, Mesopotamia, you know, the Epic of Gilgamesh and things like this, you get the stories of the Anunnaki, you know, these gods that came down from the sky and molded humanity out of the clay of the earth. And some of the translations kind of suggest that we were almost slaves, that we were almost a labor force that was created by gods that were using us for, you know, mining and, you know, all sorts of weird reasons. Who knows if that's true? But there is certainly a veneration to the stars and a knowledge of the stars that is very strange and very contradictory. And what's interesting with the pyramids is they were encased in perfect limestone that was completely polished. They would have glistened like diamonds in the desert. Like the you wouldn't be able to look at them with your naked eye because of the brilliance that would have been flashing off of this highly polished limestone. And they're so huge, and they're aligned with the Orion Star Belt. They're essentially mimicking the stars. They're mimicking the Orion stars on the Earth. And it was actually the great sage of ancient Egypt, Hermes Trismegistus, who's like a kind of archetype, like a sacred sage archetype in ancient Egypt, that said that it was in Egypt that both the heavens and the Earth were represented as one. Whatever that really means, it seems to be indicating a very close connection to the stars. And just a quick aside, there's a very interesting tribe in Africa called the Dogon tribe, and they had knowledge, this has actually been proven, they had knowledge of the Sirius star system, including a dwarf star, I believe it was Sirius B. They described and had diagrams of Sirius B on rocks, but it was completely invisible to our technology until we developed more refined telescopes. And I think it was only in the 1970s or the 1960s that we definitively proved the existence of Sirius B. And yet the Dogon tribe, who actually have a mythos about a god coming from this star system and giving them knowledge that they originally came from this star system, and they knew about this before Western technology evolved. So, you know. Where do we go with that?
Yeah, there's so much that that I think verifies or plays into the fact that it could have been extraterrestrial, just even religion in general, you know, like the even the evolution of religion. I mean, when you look at the ancient religions of the Romans and the Greeks, believing in all these gods, like who were these gods? Where did they come from? What made them believe that there was this basically a race of gods and they all had different traits or different, you know, wouldn't that, I mean, that could, what if it was these were extraterrestrial beings? These were the beings that came down and gave us all this tech that came down and built the pyramids, right? And so of course us non-extraterrestrials would say, wow, they're like gods and they came from the sky, the heavens, right? They came from the heavens and they're here. And they're going to return, you know, even the evolution into the monotheistic religions, it still is this, there's a God out there and we go to the heavens when we die and this God is coming back and is going to save us. I mean, that there's this whole notion of the God is coming back to save humanity from what and how, you know, and what, I mean, all of this plays into potentially the stories, you know, oral traditions of basically extraterrestrials.
Absolutely. And the intersections and correlations between ufology and theology are extremely strong. You know, this is a whole mixed bag when you get into the UFO subject in relation to the spiritual implications. And it's the same argument from a lot of people in terms of like an angel versus demon type of paradigm. You know, it's essentially the same archetype that's downloaded and put into a sci-fi modernized version. It's now the aliens. But if you've got someone like Tom DeLonge, the former lead singer of Blink 182, on for a talk, he would tell you that this is exactly what he believes in, because he was once talking about that and, you know, on the radio saying that people in the Pentagon, officials in the Pentagon, in the Department of Defense, etc., you know, when he was meeting these spooks and these spies, had said to him that the Greek gods are real. The Greek gods are extraterrestrials, and essentially they were a civilization that existed long before us, that was devastated by a cataclysm, and some of them left and hung out on a small outpost somewhere and interacted with humanity throughout time, and that's who the Greek gods, the pantheon of Greek gods are, and that's who many other gods who seeded influence of religion and spiritual beliefs into humanity have been. Whether that's true or not, I don't know, because I don't necessarily trust the Western intelligence community to educate me on things like UFOs. Right. They've been keeping it secret for about 75 years. So, you know, it's not necessarily something that I would just take and run with, but the implications of this cosmic knowledge that shouldn't exist at time periods where it clearly did, objectively proven through the fact that these things are aligned to different star alignments and solstices and the Orion star belt and the Dogon tribe's knowledge of Sirius. You know, there is implications here that suggest some form of interface with people with knowledge of the stars. And so, yeah, I don't throw that away. I don't consider that to be out of the question whatsoever.
Well, and especially since so much stuff lines up to that. I mean, when you start talking about UFOs, for one, now the government is starting to admit, okay, yeah, there's UFOs. You know, after all these decades of them being like, oh, you're just an insane person. These people are crazy. And now suddenly they're like, oh, okay, yeah, actually, there is some truth to all of this. You've got guys like Dr. Stephen Greer coming out saying, you know, a lot of these UFOs that we're spotting are actually reverse technology. The U.S., you know, government or private entity reverse technology, figuring because of alien spacecraft, they were able to get some reverse tech them. We have that tech. You know, when you start looking at all of those aspects and then just religion and how the narrative of religion, it makes sense that it would, you know, talking about the heavens and descending from the skies. I mean, what else do you need to know? That sounds to me like could be extraterrestrial. I mean, all of this is adding up. And they talk about the nukes, like whenever they let off a nuke, like a test a nuke, then suddenly there's aliens, like UFOs start popping up everywhere. Like, hey, what are these people doing? They're about to destroy themselves. You know, it's very interesting how much this connects.
Yeah, flaming chariots in the skies, and you know, in the ancient Sanskrit texts in India, you have the Vimanas, which are these gigantic flying fortresses that did battle in the skies, and you know, references to things that sound like energy weapons. This is stuff that's and this is again it's seeded into mythology through the, you know, the ancient texts, so it's disregarded as nothing other than symbol and metaphor and allegory. But maybe we need to be taking these myths a bit more seriously. Maybe we need to be looking at them and actually examining what they might implicate, and especially when you do actually have evidence outside of just the stories. You have the architecture, you have these incredible examples of something that doesn't match, it doesn't line up with what we're being told. So yeah, maybe there's something else in these stories that has some truth to it as well. So the interfacing with extraterrestrials, I think a lot of it is people don't want to take away from the ingenuity of humanity. And I would agree with that. I think that there is actually good evidence that we are responsible for some amazing, incredible things in prehistory, but the interfacing with non-human intelligence, this implication and idea that that's happened throughout time, I believe it. I do believe it. I think it's very strange in the year 2025 to ignore the possibility of life, not just in the universe, but we're now getting, you know, knowledge and understanding through quantum mechanics that there could be other dimensions, other layers, other threads of reality that you can't even begin to perceive. And so to be so arrogant as to say that nothing could bleed through, nothing could influence, nothing could enter our space, I think it's kind of more about being a little bit of a head in the sand type of a person. And maybe it freaks you out to think that we're so exposed to so much intelligence out there, but I think that the, you know, universe and reality in general is likely brimming with intelligence. I think that's probably the point of reality itself.